House Committee on Rules to order for Monday, February 24th, 2014. I'd like to open a work session to request an LC draft. Erin, can you please review the request?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, we have received a request to draft a resolution to honor Oregon resident and Olympic skier Bill Johnson. So that is the request this morning. We should have the LC for introduction this afternoon. And I believe Representative Barnhart has a motion for you, Madam Chair.
It's a tough one.
Madam Chair, I move the House Rules request the drafting of a measure honoring Olympic skier and Oregon resident Bill Johnson.
Representative Barnhart moves that the House Rules request the drafting of a measure honoring Olympic skier and Oregon resident Bill Johnson. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, the LC draft request is approved. And I close the work session. With that, I'd like to open an informational meeting for a presentation on the unified primary. Okay, we'll have Senator Edwards, Joel Fisher, and Jonathan Mann. Wolf.
We're still teasing.
Senator Edwards?
Different.
Do you want to identify yourself for the record?
Sure.
Is that all?
Okay.
It is.
There we go. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Chris Edwards. I'm a state senator from North Eugene, West Eugene, and Junction City. And I am appreciative of the opportunity to speak a little bit about our unified primary proposal. And they are engendered in some amendments that are before the committee today for a bill which I don't believe you've opened up a work session on or a hearing on. But those do exist in print form, and those were drafted by my office working with legislative counsel. So the unified primary system, and let me back up a little bit and say that it's nice to see some of you. Some of you were serving on House Rules when I was serving on House Rules in the 2009 session. And that is when I first started to familiarize myself with election law here in Oregon and became more interested in different ways of conducting, particularly primary elections. There have been other proposals before the voters of Oregon and other proposals before this body before, but those proposals did look different. This is not what some people call the quote-unquote open primary, and it is not what voters in Oregon saw in the same form of a top-two primary in elections previously. I believe that there are certain symptoms of our electoral system that cry for change, namely the record number of voters who are choosing not to affiliate with a major party or any party at all, yet who now cannot participate fully in the election system and choosing who will be before the voters in November. I don't think that it is right that a voter is compelled to join a political party in order to participate fully in the electoral process, a process that is funded by taxpayer dollars. Ideologically similar candidates currently can often split the vote, leading to outcomes that aren't representative of the voters who are voting. In solid red or blue districts, there is not a real contest between ideas in a general election. The outcomes in those elections, in those districts, are usually decided in the primary. I can't remember the last time I saw a really competitive race in November in an Eastern Oregon district or a Portland district. Voters under the current system of plurality voting plurality voting is what it's called in the election science world. Voters are forced to make strategic decisions with their vote rather than voting simply for the candidate that best represents their views, lest they, quote unquote, throw their vote away. So we have brought forth a system of primary voting that we call the unified primary, and it addresses all of these issues. I will briefly explain it, and then we have a video presentation, and then the rest of the panelists. The unified primary is simply one ballot on which each candidate is listed regardless of party. So you have one ballot. Every candidate, regardless of party, is on that one ballot. Each eligible voter who wishes to participate in the voting process is able to vote. They then mark their ballot with as many candidates that they wish to support as they wish. And then the top two vote getters will move forward to the general election. In conducting the election this way, it removes the quote unquote spoiler effect. It addresses the other concerns in that it allows all voters to participate fully in the election franchise, and it encourages real debate around the political spectrum of issues that matters to that particular district, rather than the first-past-the-post system that we have currently. So that is a little bit about why I think that we ought to do it, and I think that before you go through the mental machinations, as everybody I've spoken with has done around this concept, and try to think about the outcome in all the different types of districts and the likely outcomes, know that I believe that it is impossible to accurately predict what the outcomes will be in an Eastern Oregon district election after election, in a Portland district election after election, or in a swing district cycle after cycle. I don't think that we know here today. So I do think that we ought to be looking at principles like full voter participation, principles like not requiring individuals to join a political party or affiliate with a political party in order to cast their vote. So, Madam Chair, I will wrap up my testimony with that. Mark Frohnmayer, as you know, is not able to be here today. He did videotape his testimony, and if it pleases the Chair, we'd like the opportunity for him to be able to weigh in with his testimony, which he did not coordinate with me, I will say that right now, before he taped said testimony. But I received it the wee hours of the morning this morning.
Okay, do we have the wherewithal to do that? Yes, Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could,
yes,
just provide a little bit of information for the good senator about the votes in solid or red or blue districts. I go back to the election of 1997. Now, I know that was before you came in the building, but I'm sure that you were around at that time as such. And House District 57, you might, want to examine that and at least extend it back pre-1997.
I will look into that. I presume that was your district.
That was my
Representative Jensen. Okay.
That was my district when I ran as a Democrat.
Right.
Okay, go ahead. Are we ready?
Madam Chair Hoyle and members of the committee, my name is Mark Frohnmayer, and I'm the chief petitioner of the Unified Primary Initiative. Thank you for having this hearing today. I regret that I am unable to attend the discussion in person. The Unified Primary Initiative will create a more democratic elections process and help restore the public's confidence in government. I've prepared a short presentation using a hypothetical election of adorable kittens in order to explain both the need for and the operation of the Unified Primary System. Alice, Bob, Carrot, Deb, Erline, and Frankie are running for governor of Cassburg. Like Oregon, Cassburg has two major political parties. Carrot and Deb are independents. Like Oregon, Cassburg has a partisan primary election first, where red hat and blue hat voters receive state-funded advertising and ballots for candidates in their same major party. And just like Oregon, about one-third of the kittens, the ones not registered with either one of the two major parties, are shut out of the process, and Carrot and Deb are forced to sit on the sidelines. Each of the two major party candidates advanced by a plurality of voters in their own parties, so candidates willing to work across party lines can be punished by their own party bases. In many cases, the majority of voters did not vote for either primary winner, but because they are the winners of the primary, they are the presumed front-runners for the general election. Although independent candidates can enter the process at this point, they have little chance of winning, and here's why. When a voter can only make one choice in an election, ideologically similar candidates split votes. So a voter that actually favors a long shot or independent candidate must instead strategically vote for the so-called lesser of evils. We call this the spoiler effect. As a result, every election ends up really being a race between a red hat and a blue hat, each chosen by a small and opposing subset of the population. The balance of power shifts back and forth, depending on which major party is least disliked by an increasingly disillusioned electorate. As you can imagine, after several generations, Cassburg's government is stifled, all because of an unfair divided election system. Candidates wanting to win must play to a partisan base before they can make their cases to the electorate as a whole. Independents are sidelined in the primary, and their supporters are warned they must strategically vote against them in the general. Be they kitten or human, 30% of voters are shut out, and in districts dominated by one party, the election is effectively over in the primary, before most voters have had a say. This also means that well-financed special interests can use threats of a partisan primary challenge to shift the entire political spectrum to extremes, and election results are skewed when similar candidates are in the race, spoiling the outcome for the best candidate and the majority of voters. We think there's a better way to run elections. Here's how it works. First, a unified primary election. Every voter gets the same ballot that shows all candidates, regardless of party. Every voter gets a simple yes or no vote on each candidate, and the two candidates receiving the most yes votes progress to the general election. Every voter has an equal say on each candidate without regard to the number of candidates in the race or their affiliations, and voters aren't strategically compelled to vote against their actual favorites. The general election becomes a race between the two candidates most approved by all, where every voter, including those who approved or disapproved of both candidates in the primary, can choose between them after taking a closer look. The result is a better democracy and happier kittens. Candidates campaign to all voters without having to pass through a partisan filter first. Every voter gets more choice and an equal voice on every candidate. Independent candidates get a fair shake since they participate in the full process and voters aren't penalized for honestly voting for their favorites. Special interests can't game the system via partisan primary challenges, and no more spoilers. The unified primary is easy to understand, and it's a simple drop-in replacement for the taxpayer-funded primary system we have now. I truly appreciate the opportunity to speak with you here today. Asking elected leaders to change the voting system that puts them in office is never an easy request, yet the Oregon legislature has consistently stood up to embrace new ideas and reforms to our democratic process. I hope today's hearing is the beginning of a productive discussion about how we can continue to better reflect the views and values of Oregonians in our representative government and afford all Oregon voters an equal voice. Thank you.
All
All right, Mr. Fisher, and please keep your testimony to things that were not covered by the senator or Mr. Frohnmeyer or the kittens.
I'll do my best. Chair Hoyle, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Fisher, senior policy analyst with the Oregon Business Association, and I do pride myself on typically coming in at just about under 30 seconds every time I testify. I'll try to keep it right at about there. General election turnout since the year 2000 has averaged 78%, and turnout in our primary elections in the same time span has averaged 46%, a 32% difference between the primary and the general election. About 30% of Oregonians are registered that are registered to vote are not affiliated with one of the major parties. So just draw a distinction between that number of 30% not being registered with a major party and a 32% difference between the primary and the general election. And the number of growing non-affiliated, or the number of non-affiliated voters is growing. Some choose to register with a smaller party. Most choose to not register with any political party at all. Already in similar in size to Republicans and Democrats, as we know, they're not allowed to fully participate in the system. And non-affiliated voters are actually on pace to be registered in size bigger than the Republican Party. We have things like vote by mail in Oregon and the voter initiative system, which allows a very high level of political participation, yet many voters are shut out of the primary process. If a voter who is registered as a Democrat must choose between a Democrat and a Republican in the general election, why shouldn't that voter be allowed to help choose which Republican they will have to choose a chance to choose for in the general election? Try thinking about that statement again without party labels. If a voter must choose between two candidates in the general election, why shouldn't they be able to help choose both candidates in the primary election? All this would be possible with a unified primary system, which does not shut anyone out. Think about the pride you feel in the general election when you get someone from the opposite party to vote for you. I remember actually campaigning for Chris Edwards back in 2006, I believe, and going up to a lot of non-affiliated voters' doors and even Republican doors and being able to have a conversation about issues, not about party labels, and convincing Republicans or non-affiliated voters to vote for a Democrat. And with the unified primary system, we get to make it more about the issues than about party labels, which is the trend that we are seeing is happening already in the electorate. Senator Edwards said, we don't really know what the outcomes are. I beg to differ. I think we do know what the outcomes are. The outcomes will be a fairly elected person and a good person being elected. The unified primary makes people excited to vote again. Everybody I talk with about this is excited to vote, gets excited to vote again, kind of like Obama did and like Reagan did. The Oregon Business Association believes that a well-functioning democracy is essential to the state's overall success, and we would urge anybody's support of the unified primary process, whether at a bill here in the building or in the initiative process. Thank you.
Thank you. Longer than 30 seconds, but thank you for your testimony.
I understand.
I understand. I just thought I'd point that out. Mr. Manton.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for this conversation today. My name is Jonathan Manton, and I'm hoping to just share a little bit of my personal story as to how I get to being supportive of this kind of proposal and this proposal in particular. And I hope that it's the start of a conversation, as Mark said on the video, that we can continue on. I spent much of my 20s and 30s registering voters and overseeing an awful lot of other people who were registering voters as volunteers. And this activities took place in Oregon as well as outside of Oregon, a lot in Lane County, a lot in Deschutes County, and then also in Riverside, California, and in Winnemucca, Nevada, and in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. All very different places, a very different kind of body politics. And one common denominator, and that's especially when you're talking about people that were also in their 20s and 30s, and that would be disenfranchised. It's very, very hard to convince someone to register to vote of this age in general. And it's not that the folks that we worked hard in, and was counting numbers, it's probably more than 2,000 that me and my teams have signed up to vote. And you found so many people who, are we going to go to the homeless shelter to feed folks? Yep, I'll do that. Sign me up. I'll volunteer for that. Are we going to, go clean up the side of the road? Yep, sign me up. I'd like to volunteer to that. I want to be an active member of my community. Would you like to register to vote? Nope. That's wasted time. And it's amazing, once you have those kind of conversations with people, you usually can bring them around. But it's a hurdle. And then you right now get a second hurdle when that person is not allowed to vote in the primary because they registered as not affiliated. So these kind of barriers I do see as a problem. And as I look at a proposal like this, I say, wow, this does help with that intensely. As Joel said, it's amazing how when you just, I was at the bowling alley a few nights ago and we're having this conversation, and you got three other teams of bowlers, you know, listening to what we're talking about. Several of them coming in, hey, how does that work? That sounds interesting. That sounds good. I'd like to do that. Yes, I'm registered as this party or that party, but if I had my choice, I'd really rather be non-affiliated, and then that way I could just vote, you know, across parties. I've heard that a lot, and I think it's a good thing. I think this proposal would drive turnout up. I think it would drive participation up, and I think that we all benefit from that. I think it's harder to game this system than it is now. And we can happy to answer questions and continue the conversations about that. But when you get to vote for several people instead of just one, if you try to monkey around, you're going to mess yourself up. It's a dumb strategy. And I'll if there's questions about that, maybe we can talk about it more or another time when we have more time. But I think this is a safer way to do elections. I think it's harder to game the system, and I think it drives participation up. And especially among young folks who are really needed, especially in our long-term health for our governance systems. And with that, I will just be quiet and say thank you very much for our time.
Thank you. Any questions for the panel? Representative Harker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since I'm not running again, I can say this here, as I've said it many times on the doorstep. If I could get elected as an independent, I would run that way, because I did get a fair number of Republican votes, a lot of independent votes, and you know, we each of us does that to some degree. I think I could really get behind this system. We've all had those conversations with people who want to participate and can't participate in the primary process, and you know, just they make the decision along conscience that they're not going to register as one of the party members in order to vote in a primary. And I think, as you've pointed out, the whole process is worse off for that loss. A couple of questions. Where is this used now? What happens in the case of a tie? Unlikely, but possible. And would, if a ballot can have multiple marks on it or multiple holes poked in it, would that potentially lead to more fraud at the polling place? Because it would no longer be one ballot, one mark for each position. There could be multiples, theoretical, and that's the least important right now of my questions.
I think you mean mailbox, not polling place, right?
Pardon?
Mailbox, not polling place.
I'm talking about when the ballot is
oh,
received.
Oh, when the ballot, right. Got it.
Yes, not yep. Polling place.
Oh.
Yeah. Anybody want to answer that?
I can jump in and do some of them, and maybe I'll leave some for the senator as well. Looks like he's copiously writing down notes. I'll take the last one first, the kind of like monkeying around concept. So the way I think about it is, let's say you have a Democrat candidate with very strong appeal. You've got broad appeal. You've got a Republican candidate with broad appeal, and you've got a Republican crazy pants. You know, you could switch it around the other side if you wanted to. So the theory would be that, you know, you would vote for, if you're trying to monkey around, you would vote for, as a Democrat, you'd vote for your Democrat with broad appeal and maybe the perceived Republican crazy pants, trying to set up the general election so that you could win it easier. But if you did that, so then you'd have the Republicans voting for Republican and Republican crazy pants. You'd have Democrats voting for a Democrat and Republican crazy pants. What you're setting up is a close contest between crazy pants and a Democrat as a Democrat voter. So there's a contest between second and third that matters an awful lot in this. That's who gets to go on to the finals or to the general election. And if you're not careful monkeying around, you're going to boost the chances for the crazy party at the expense of the one that you're voting for. Because if you vote for those two, it's basically nullifying the vote between the two of them in the contest for second and third. It doesn't make sense to do that. It's not a smart way to vote. Every scenario that I keep thinking about through this would be the smartest, most strategic vote would be to vote for, if you've got one candidate that you really like, just vote for that one. If you've got two or three that you think are good and that would work for you, then vote for those two or three. But gaming it, I think, would carry significant risk if you could do it on a big enough scale to actually influence the election. Whereas now, if you wanted to game it, you just sign up as a member of the other party. Like, if you wanted to organize big, you know, efforts to try to monkey around now that would actually be successful, there's nothing stopping you from doing that in the current system.
And real briefly, I am not aware of any other governments that use the combination of a unified primary with the traditional general election, that 1-2 process. The bodies that do use this system are more private associations, although the Secretary General of the United Nations is elected by this system. And then some, one of the things that's interesting, especially as folks who are interested in the math behind this system and the mathematical correctness, it's interesting to note that two prominent math associations use this in their elections, the Mathematical Association of America and the American Mathematical Society. So.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm looking at, it's a very interesting idea. I'm looking at Section 16.
Of the amendment?
What is it called? The dash one. Isn't that one we're talking about?
I'm going to close the informational meeting and open a public hearing on House Bill 4054.
I'm sorry, I didn't realize.
Aaron, tell us about the bill and the amendment.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4054, for the purposes of this meeting this morning, we're going to talk about the dash one amendment, not the underlying measure. The underlying measure will be heard in this committee in the form of Senate Bill 1504. The dash one amendment before you replaces the original member. A measure requires all candidates for partisan election, regardless of political party affiliation or non-affiliation, to appear on the same unified primary election ballot with two candidates receiving the most votes advancing to the general election. The Dash 1 Amendment refers Act to the people for their approval or rejection at the 2014 general election. I just want to point out for the committee and the public that this amendment was posted on Friday morning. At some point over the weekend, it fell out of the system, so I do apologize for the confusion for anybody looking for it on Sunday. It is up there now again.
I now go to the question. So, question to the amendment.
Thank you. And I apologize, Madam Chair. I didn't realize we weren't talking about the bill a minute ago. So now I'm germane. Yeah?
Good.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Section 16. In the case of a vacancy in the office of state senator or state representative that is to be filled by an appointed authority, the following apply, notwithstanding any other eligible person. Any otherwise eligible person may be appointed to fill a vacancy regardless of the person's affiliation or lack of affiliation with a political party. I have a comment and then a question. The comment is this is very similar to the vacancy filling process that was outlined in the last vote we had statewide on this kind of an idea, I think at that time we were calling it the jungle primary. But regardless of what you call it, I see major flaws in this approach. The most important one is that it glues legislators into their seats, especially if the county that their district is located in is controlled by members of the other party, because it could easily change the balance of power in the legislature. The current system that we have may not be the greatest in all the world for replacing a legislator who leaves office, but it has the virtue of not affecting the balance of power in the legislature. When a legislature leaves for another job, takes an appointment to a court of appeals, for example, there isn't any question about how that's going to be managed. We may not know who's going to get the appointment, but we do know it's going to be a member of the same party. With this method, an additional calculation has to come into
line with a person who is thinking about resigning for whatever reason, and that is, what's going to happen to my seat? Will it change the balance of power in the House or the Senate? Could you comment on why you chose what appears to me to be a major flaw in this approach?
And please introduce yourself for the record before you answer.
Representative Barnhart and Chair Hoyle, my name is Jonathan Manton, again for the record in this hearing. I think that's an awesome conversation, very interesting. And I don't know the direct answer to it. I don't know why the vacancy provisions were chosen as they are now. Vacancy provisions were chosen as they are now in this. We are working, knowing that we're having this conversation today, not planning on any actual votes to move this at this time. We were just having a conversation. And with that, I would add that my familiarity with the proponents of the bill and the folks who are bringing this forward, I've heard them say several times that there would need to be legislative tweaks and changes to come back. So if this ballot measure passes in November this time, we would look to you, the legislature, in 2015 to come back and probably make several tweaks to incorporate the principles that are in line here, but make it better. And I'm sure that conversation along the vacancy provisions, as well as, you know, several other, could certainly be debated and talked about and more fully vetted in the 2015 legislature if this is to pass.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was the answer I was expecting.
Okay. Anybody else? Yes, Representative Jensen.
I have a number of concerns with this. And I think it's interesting that you say that probably there's no elective or no governmental office has ever really worked under this. One of the things that we need out of our political system, I believe, is stability. We look at nations who have gone through periods of political instability, and they are extremely dysfunctional for those nations. In the parliamentary system, as it exists in many parts of the world, you can wind up with a hodgepodge of people in parliament. And frequently, no one group has the ability to be a majority government. Okay. That they need, in order to be in the majority, or they need in order to function, to form some types of coalitions. And coalitions, by definition, are very fragile. And in, you know, sometimes crisis situations, and not even sometimes crisis, they fall apart. And the nation, the people suffer, I think, because probably the classic example of this is France in post-World War II. They had 20-some governments in the period of a year. I'm not suggesting that your approach might do this, although I'd worry a little about the possibility of a whole bunch of little fringe groups around the state. Right quickly, I could imagine a possibility in our historical past, the possibility of a Green Party type of thing. Frequently, they lose confidence in the sitting government to fund their own candidates. The advantage of those has been that they seldom, not always, but seldom get them elected, and so they're, we don't disturb this kind of ability to maintain a majority party. We don't necessitate coalitions. The same sort of analysis could be used with the far right, some of the far right movements that we've seen in recent years. If we'd happen to get two or three of those going around the state, not going to have to worry about the far right movement in Eugene or Portland. They're not going to have a tremendous impact there. And you're not going to have to worry about the Green Party in Eastern Oregon having much of an impact. But by the time you put the combination of the two into the legislature, potentially, you approach the possible necessity of some type of coalition being formed in order to get, you know, we say there are three magic numbers here, 31, 16, and 1 sort of thing. And in order to get to 31 or 16, as the case may be, I fear the possibility of a need for coalitions. And when I see that, if I look at history, I see what appears to be generally instability. That really bothers me. And I can be a fairly outspoken critic of political parties. And I suppose my own historical record here would indicate I've had some difficulty with that. By the same token, in the process, they seem to work pretty well. It's interesting to note that our founding fathers never envisioned political parties. The Constitution wasn't set up on the basis of political parties. But they just kind of naturally evolved, and it's been imperfect, yes. We've had some major problems at times, yes. I think we need to look very, very carefully at what could be some of the downsides before we make some movement in this direction. Now, one of the advantages of having some diversity in the building, you have the young legislator, and then you have the old legislator, a moderate to liberal, another one a moderate to conservative. And as a consequence, you get, a nice balance of two different ideas or multiple ideas coming forth to be debated. I don't want to appear a point of saying that the idea isn't worth considering. It isn't that it isn't worth debating, that it isn't, that it doesn't have merit. But I would urge you caution as you proceed, that we don't create something that may turn out to be worse than what we have at the present time. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Very briefly, yep. In response, Representative Jensen, I have always admired your own ability and to lead by what you believe is the right thing to do at the time. And I certainly respect your own struggles that you have had within the party system that we have currently. And my only response would be that it's my belief that the concerns that you have expressed about fringe, for lack of a better word, fringe groups or really super minority groups becoming frustrated with the current system and thereby, you know, running there and maybe getting more traction is two things. One, I would argue that our current system amplifies their voice more than this would, than the unified primary system. Secondly, I believe that if in a unified primary system, those were the type of candidates that were advancing to the general election in those type of districts, then that's who the people want. I mean, if the people want to choose between those type of candidates, then that really does better represent the views of that particular district. And you're right, we have to govern by coalition. It's a matter of whether or not those coalitions exist within the party, and the current voting system amplifies and gives inordinate amount of strength to these more fringe points of view, or whether or not those coalitions exist between legislators or, you know, whatever body of government we're talking about electing.
All right, thank you. We have some other people who would like to be heard, and we have to keep things moving, so thank you so much. Appreciate it. Janice Deisinger, and is there anyone else that wants to be heard on this particular issue? Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Chair, well, and members of the committee, I'm Janice Deisinger, and I would just urge a no vote on this bill and amendment. I think it's a very important issue that we're considering here on the primary, but there are, in addition, several other things in the bill to be talked about, and there we need time to do that. And so I would just ask you to please vote no on that for that reason alone. I'm concerned, in addition to what these folks have said, I voted as an independent for 10 years before I chose a party. I didn't want to join one either, but I finally figured out that I needed to be a member of a party if I wanted to have a voice in a primary. And a person can do that even for a short period of time for the primary if they choose to, so nobody's being shut out. I was concerned about one part in the bill, the amendment, where it said if the unified primary is found unconstitutional. So, in just by saying that, I think we're admitting that it could be challenged, and that could be a real problem. Then we have a number of other parts of the bill that would still go and be enacted, and one of them being the PCPs. And I would just like to say I agree with Representative Lou Frederick. I saw his meeting his testimony online. I really agree with what he said there. And I had an opportunity to read Dan Meeks, and I agreed with him as well. So I won't go over all of those points, but I would really ask you to add my voice to theirs. And thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. And I just to let you know, this is a public hearing. It's an informational hearing, because I think that, you know, although we might agree or disagree, it's important for people's voices to be heard. And if they have an opinion, I think they have a right to have a hearing. But we don't have any intention at this point of moving that amendment forward. But again, you know, as you know, it's important. It's important in our political system to air different points of view, mm-hmm. and allow people to have their voices be heard. So that's what this
is
about today. Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to close public hearing on House Bill 4054, and committee will be in recess until 3 o'clock today.
We will be back in this hearing room.
And we'll be back in this hearing room. Thank you.
Okay.
I'm going to reconvene the House Committee on Rules. And with that, open up a public hearing on SCR 202. Senator Olson.
I didn't mean for you to take it out of order.
You know, we're always delighted when our Senate colleagues come and visit us. Why wouldn't I offer you this kind of hospitality?
Well, thank you very much.
She's great at buttering people up.
So. Yeah.
I'm a politician.
Absolutely nothing wrong with that.
No, sir.
I'll let everybody fill their chair.
Identify yourself for the record and carry on.
Thank you. Madam Chair, my name is Senator Alan Olson. I represent Senate District 20. I'm here today for an extraordinary bill. This bill honors Officer Robert Lipke, who was killed November 3rd, 2013, in Oregon City. Officer Lipke was an ordinary man performing an ordinary heroic deed, saved the lives of three other people, but gave his own in his actions. There's not much to say about this bill other than the fact that this bill is the ultimate honor that the state of Oregon can provide for a hero. And very simply, I ask your support for this bill. And I would be glad to take any questions.
Anybody?
Just a comment. Yes. You'll remember we also had a House bill that in honor provided for college benefits to children of volunteer and part-timers, police and fire. So this is a good fit.
Good companion.
Yep.
And I would remind this committee that this man was a reserve officer, a volunteer, non-paid for his duty. And he died in that line. So thank you.
Thank you so much, and we really appreciate you coming here today to speak on his on behalf of this bill. With that, I will close the public hearing and open a work session on SCR 202.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Concurrent Resolution 202 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair Hovey moves Senate Concurrent Resolution 202 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, the motion passes and SCR 202 is adopted. We will assign Representative Barton as the carrier. Thank you. With that,
203.
With that, I'll open a public hearing on Senate Concurrent Resolution 203. Senator Johnson. No,
yeah, I told him he didn't.
Come the wider way.
No, he's going to move the chair for her.
Okay.
You're getting fast, Senator.
Getting used to moving around.
She's always been scary. It's getting worse.
Docking maneuver completed. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Betsy Johnson, and I have the great privilege of representing Senate District 16. I'm here as well for Representative Williamson, who is testifying in another committee. I'm here in support of honoring Tom Vaughn, a wonderful Oregonian, and I'm going to do something that is a little bit unusual, but I don't think I could have said it better than the obituary that appeared in the Daily Astorian. And so I am going to excerpt some pieces and make my case for why I think this is such an appropriate thing for the Oregon legislature to do. So I'm quoting now from the Daily Astorian. Thomas Vaughn's death last Friday summoned memories of a buoyant post-war Oregon in which he built the Oregon Historical Society from a sleepy repository to a vibrant showplace. Vaughn touched just about everything that happened in that display of Oregon history over the decades. That included the creation of the National Memorial at Fort Clatsop. Like his contemporaries, Tom McCall and Mark Hatfield, Vaughn was an actor on a public stage in a pre-digital age in which emotional intelligence and face-to-face communication was the coin of the realm. Vaughn deployed his rich bass baritone oratory to great effect. Like McCall, Vaughn was immense fun to listen to and to be around. He had a keen appreciation for the human comedy that was especially apparent in the great characters of rural Oregon. As an entrepreneur in what might be called the public history sector, Vaughn inspired younger aspirants who have made their own marks. Without a sense of our history, that of our town, our state, and our nation, we become rootless and lack appreciation for our origins. Vaughn despaired that the Oregon Department of Education eliminated a history requirement. The schools have retreated, but the study of history flourishes. While America is afflicted with widespread cultural illiteracy, we also live in a golden age of biography. For the reader who's motivated to seek it out, there is an abundance of beautifully written new literature. Vaughn left the Oregon Historical Society before museums everywhere had to redefine themselves. The Historical Society is beginning to emerge from a poorly planned succession after Vaughn's leaving. He left an institution with a rich legacy. Oregon is richer for his great intelligence and enthusiasm. The only correction I would make to that is that under the current leadership of Carrie Timchuk, Oregon Historical Society is once again regaining its place as sort of the grand dame of Oregon museums after nearly auguring in from neglect and, frankly, from abandonment by this body. Oregon's repository of our tangible treasures is doing brilliantly under Carrie Timchuk's leadership. This memorial that you are considering today passed unanimously on the Senate side. It memorializes our historian laureate, a wonderful guy, and the only thing that made Tom better was his absolutely indomitable wife. They were a perfect partnership. They completed each other as rarely two people can. Sherry was one of the people that broke the glass ceiling for corporate board service in Oregon. She was a Russian scholar in her own right. I'm told she could type on a Cyrillic typewriter faster than she could type on an English typewriter. Together, they were a wonderful couple. Please give this honor consideration and move it forward.
Great. Thank you so much for your testimony. Any comments or questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Senator. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing and open a work session on SCR 203.
Madam Chair, I move SCR 203 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Oh, then Vice Chair Holby moves SCR 203 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. No objection? Okay. Motion passes and SCR 203 is adopted. Carrier will be Representative Williamson.
Turn the page.
We'll vote about this one. I'm going to open a work session for the introduction of committee measures. Erin, can you please review the LC?
Yes, the LC we have and is available on OLIS is LC 285. It is the request we made this morning to draft a resolution to honor Bill Johnson for being the first American male to win gold medal at the Olympic Games and Alpine event.
Madam Chair, I move LC 285, dated 2/24/2014, be introduced as a committee bill.
Vice Chair Holvey. Sorry, has moved LC 285 to be introduced as a committee bill, dated 2/24/2014 to be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, the measure is introduced as a committee bill.
Sorry, don't know.
Yeah, we're going to have an explanation. This looks good enough. We ought to have a public explanation.
You really did. Okay, open a public hearing on SCR 201. Phil Lemon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Phil Lemon. I'm with the State Court Administrator's Office. It's, I think, very appropriate you scheduled this along with your resolution honoring Tom Vaughn because SCR 201 memorializes the centennial, the 100th year of complete continuous operations of the Supreme Court building, which is the home of the judicial branch of state government. It's the oldest building on the Capitol Mall. We've updated it with private funds on the inside, and you have been very generous in your support to keep it standing upright and safe on the outside, and we appreciate that. If you've not had the chance to come visit it, we would love to have you come over and see it, and thank you for your consideration. I'd be glad to answer questions.
Questions? Okay,
I was just going to comment that it was lucky to have survived the fire that burned the Capitol building down. It is a treasure, and I have seen it on the inside, and it is really lovely. It really does justice to it. It has that stately feel.
Thank you, Representative.
Okay, and with that, we'll close the public hearing and open a work session on SCR 201.
Madam Chair, I move SCR 201 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair Holvey moves SCR 201 to the floor with be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? If not, the motion passes and SCR 201 is adopted. Representative Hicks, would you be the carrier?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, with that, we are adjourned.
On the number.
Don't know what I mean.